Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Technical difficulties with our recording this morning in worship, so we bring this message not from the fullness and the energy of worship at Sunday morning at the table, but from the quiet of the sanctuary after everyone has gone home.
We're grateful this week to Ann Howard's blog. It's called Change the Soundtrack. And her thoughts and biblical reflections shape much of this message, as the story of Chan and Krunam are based on David Batstone's book, Not for Sale, The Return of the Global Slave Trade and How We Can Fight It. This week we conclude our worship series on the art and resurrection of justice. And this morning we are going to focus on the voice of the voiceless. The poet and spoken word artist Micah Bonnier reminds us, there's no such thing as a voiceless person, only a world that must learn to listen. This morning we will try and do just that, learn to listen to some of the voices often deemed voiceless in our world today. We'll do so by weaving together an ancient story from John's Gospel and a contemporary story from Southeast Asia. Both of these stories begin with people living amidst deep fear. John's community lived with the reality of persecution and the threat of extinction. Their first century Mediterranean world was a scary place. The persecutions were heating up, and the followers of Jesus were, in the eyes of Rome, just so many lambs for the slaughter. To these fearful people, Jesus speaks these words from John 10, the first 10 verses. Very truly I tell you, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold by the gate but climbs in by another way is a thief and a bandit. The people knew thieves and bandits back then. What they longed for was a good shepherd.
Chan was a 9-year-old boy in Burma living with his mother and father and sister, when fear came into their lives like a thief in the night and stole away his father's life. Chan's father was actually a middleman in a drug smuggling ring. Chan had no idea. His family barely made enough to survive. His dad was a middleman, not someone at the top of the drug ring, but someone who could easily be pushed out, and that's what happened that traumatic night, right in front of Chan and his mother and his sister. The only source of subsistence for this family, that person's life was taken. I can't fathom how traumatized that little boy, Chan, and his mother and sister must have been. 3 days later, following the Buddhist custom of burial and grieving, the family returned home from the temple, and Chan's mother had no alternative but to turn to the streets to beg for her family. It took very little time for a local trafficker to target her. A factory owner observed that she had 2 children with her and no husband watching over her. So he approached her and offered her to buy her children as workers in his garlic factory. Within a month of his father's death, Chan and his sister had been forced into labor in this garlic factory. Chan was just 9 years old. He and his sister joined 8 other children peeling small cloves of garlic. They worked in a single room that was attached to a small office where the owner could sit and supervise his young laborers through a wall of glass. The kids worked long hours for no pay and very little food. Peeling as many cloves as the owner demanded, it was almost impossible, and so they were punished with beatings and even with burnings. They slept a few hours each night in a nearby apartment until the owner woke them and put them in a van and transported them back to the factory for another long day into night of work. This was their entire existence, from factory to van to apartment to van to factory and back to the apartment. There was no time for these children to remember the lives that they had before they were sold, no time to dream about what it might be like to be free, and Chan was sinking into despair. He longed to find an escape for himself and for his sister. He summoned every ounce of courage that he could. By this time, his frame was 10 years old, and he waited for an opening. He stood at the apartment window one night as the patrol dogs finally turned the corner, and he leaped from the second-story building to the pavement below. Despite the shock of this intense pain running through his weak limbs, he quickly realized two things. One, that his sister, who was even more frail, would never make the jump. And two, he had to get away as fast as he could. He made the heartbreaking decision to leave his sister behind. He said that he never considered even going home because he feared that his mother would punish him for lack of obedience and send him back. So there he was, in the streets, alone and hurt and scared and determined to survive.
The Jesus movement at the time of John's gospel was being heard was still new. They were struggling to divine themselves against the threat of Rome and the threat of competing worldviews. And like Chan, they were determined to survive. One of the ways they survived was by telling stories of hope. They met under cover of darkness, hidden from the authorities, huddled in secret, and told stories to counter the fear that they felt. One of the stories they told was about a shepherd and his sheep. From John 10 again. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. The huddled followers of Jesus long to be called by name and led out, literally. In ancient Palestine, shepherds brought the sheep of the village into a common sheepfold for the night. And in the morning, in order to take their sheep out to the fields for grazing, each shepherd had to separate his sheep from that common flock. Each sheep had a name, and each shepherd had a particular way of calling his sheep, so each sheep would respond only to its own shepherd. Even if another shepherd called the sheep by its own name, it would not respond. The followers of Jesus needed a good shepherd.
A painter with a university degree in art would be one of the least likely candidates for becoming a good shepherd. But a good shepherd she is. Her name is Krunam. And she goes to the sheepfold and leads God's people to freedom along the border in Thailand. Krunam lived and worked like many other artists in northern Thailand, but eventually she could no longer ignore the voices of the young street children she encountered along the river. So she tried to speak directly to them, but they would not follow the sound of her voice. They feared adults on every level, and they were wary. So Krunam did what any phenomenal artist and shepherd would do. She created space for their voices to emerge. She gathered empty canvases and paintbrushes and tins of paints under her arms. And then this good shepherd returned to the riverfront to learn the stories of these street children. She left them the supplies with this simple request: paint your story. Soon she came back and she found paintings. But they were like nothing I can fathom. Horrific scenes. They shocked her senses. These young children painted pictures of pain and anger, of fear, and even of torture. The children shared how they had arrived on the streets there in Chiang Mai. They told of various methods which they had been trafficked from their homes into slavery. And still, though, these children considered themselves to be the lucky ones. They had escaped the bad shepherds who had stolen them away like thieves and bandits.
John's community knew all about good shepherds and bad shepherds. The thieves and bandits of their day taxed the poor into deeper poverty, starved the people while feeding themselves, and traded the shalom of their tradition for the terror of Rome. Like the children who shared their stories with Cruinam, the followers of Jesus needed to discern the differences between the good shepherd and the bad shepherds. It is clear that both ancient folks from our text and the children in Thailand longed for a good shepherd to lead them to freedom. Hear this from the scriptures. When the good shepherd has brought out all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. They will not follow a stranger, but they will run from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus used this figure of speech with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So again, Jesus said to them, "Very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep." Jesus is the good shepherd and the gate to freedom and to abundance. The way of this good shepherd leads to hope, even in the face of death.
The street children that Cruinam began to talk and to listen with, they faced death down. They had longed for freedom, and these children had escaped the dire situation, leaving behind many of them, their siblings and their friends who were still right there, held captive just around the corner. These children, though, were free in a sense, but they knew nothing of abundance. The karaoke bars is where many of them actually worked. And Cruinam was shocked to learn what was going on behind the scenes in these karaoke bars. The children that she encountered there, well, first Cruinam decided she might go in and talk with one of the owners, and then she thought better. Instead, she went into one of the karaoke bars where some of these children were held, and she grabbed one. She grabbed a child underneath her arm, and then she was determined to rescue as many as she could. So you might be able to imagine her breaking into this karaoke bar with children there, placing one under her arm, another under the other, and simply breaking out the doors. Within just a short night, she had led six children through the gates to freedom. And she did this for several nights until she had to tread with more caution. Those karaoke club owners had put out the word, and they were determined to take her life if she even walked into another establishment. These thieves and bandits dared to believe that Cruinam was stealing their property. Jesus says, "All who came before me are thieves and bandits, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters by me will be saved and will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." Cruinam longed for these children to have life and to have it abundantly. Calling sheep out from the karaoke clubs, well, that worked in the short term, but she needed a long-term strategy because her house was now almost full. So this good shepherd organized teams of people to roam the streets at night and to accompany those unaccompanied children as they were fresh off the bus from the Thailand-Burmese border. These folks, Cruinam and her friends around her, these other good shepherds, started to raise their voices for freedom in direct competition with those that were recruiting for traffickers. Soon, Cruinam realized that if she moved about 150 miles north along the river, she could save even more children. And so she began with a drop-in center for 25 kids, but soon she had to support 60.
Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because a hired hand does not care for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep."
Krunam would not allow herself to become a hired hand. She laid down her life, literally changing everything about who she was and how she lived in order for God's children to have life and have it with abundance. Before long, Chan, the little boy we first heard about, he would become one of the sheep that this good shepherd would lead to life and abundance. But it didn't happen overnight. Chan was foraging for food or things to sell from a dumpster when Krunam first saw him. She asked his age. He was now 11 and very small. He was malnourished, he lacked sleep, and he suffered from the torture that he experienced in the garlic factory. Krunam tried to learn his story, but he didn't yet trust her voice, so he stayed away. He stayed on the outskirts. But one day, Chan made a visit to Krunam's drop-in center. And there he saw boys and girls learning and playing. He saw glimpses of life and abundance. So he began to drop in more and more often. Krunam and her staff, the people working with her, were able to give Chan a free meal, some medicine, and even a bath. He began to develop friendships with those good shepherds. They taught him how to read and write, and they cheered for him when he played badminton. Still, Chan would return to the streets at night, where he would try to sleep. He was still plagued by nightmares of his escape and the fact that he had abandoned his little sister. Over time, Chan began to open up and to trust his own voice and the voice of Krunam. She listened as he told his story, and finally, he was led through the gate to stay overnight with these other children that had been freed by Krunam and her growing team of good shepherds. For the first time in years, Chan slept, not under a bridge or on the street or on the floor of an apartment, getting up early in the morning to go to a factory, but in the safety of a home that was there for God's children. More time passed, and finally Chan shared his full story with Krunam. He shared the nightmares about the brutal life in the garlic factory. Though he'd been free for some time, he was tortured in his sleep by imagining his sister trapped in the factory with no shepherd to call her to freedom. The world, though, is learning to listen to Chan's voice. They listen to his voice through Krunam, and you listen this morning through our words. We listen through the writings of one just a few miles away in San Francisco. Chan longs to be now a good shepherd who might call his own sister to freedom.
We here in this room, we are the people of the Good Shepherd. We are the latest in the long line of people to follow the voice of the Good Shepherd. Early Christians began, you see, to scratch this image of the Good Shepherd. It was their earliest image. It's a lamb slung over the shepherd's shoulders. It is on catacomb walls. They painted it on frescoes. They put it onto their baptismal fonts to mark the beginning of a new life following the shepherd's voice, and then they would carve it into the tombs to mark the end of their lives. They belonged to the Good Shepherd, belonged to the Good Shepherd their whole life long. This way of life told them who they followed, who they were, and more than that, how to live. And how to live abundantly in the midst of all of that persecution. They were to follow the Good Shepherd's voice. Well, they knew they belonged, but it didn't stop there. The way of the Good Shepherd meant it was a way of a wide embrace and a hugely long reach. Just as each one of them had found a safe spot on the inside of their tight circle of belonging in those early days, so were they to hear the voices of those that were still left out, that were still living in the margins. Just as they had been given hope in the midst of violence and persecution, so were they to encourage one another into finding their own voices. Just as they were able to be held close in the comfort of a loving shepherd who knew their name, so were they to reach out, learn the names of others, and to call out to them to join this abundant life. We have learned that Chan is now safely in the generous and fierce care of Krunong, and he has a place to sleep, and he has food to eat, and he's learning skills to enable him to care for himself. And those early followers of Jesus, recorded in John's gospel themselves, began to be known for the same kind of generosity, for the same way that Krunong watched over Chan. The earliest followers of Jesus watched over the very least and the very lost, and it was a shocking thing to that community. They became known for love. They became known as the beloved community. Isn't that how we want to be known? Isn't it? In the midst of the fear and the overwhelm, when we hear stories like this, don't we long to be the beloved community listening to the voices of the voiceless, telling us where to reach in love? Krunong listened to Chan. Others listened to Krunong. Today, we hear this story, and maybe we are sitting here wondering, whose voice do I need to hear? How am I going to do that? How will my listening lead me into loving? How will my loving lead all of us to freedom and abundant life? The kind of love I'm talking about is what is possible with the best kind that you can imagine of what I might call mother love, which is as tender as it is fierce in many cases, not all. But the best kind of mother love, which is tender and fierce, means we name danger when it threatens, and we meet it with savvy and with courage. It means we pay attention and we know what time it is and we know what the weather's like out there, even though they don't want to put on their damn coats. I don't care. It means paying attention and teaching the difference between right and wrong. It means being responsible for our words and our actions and calling on others, like public officials, to continue to close down trafficking rings in every community, out to Arden, just to name one. It means to take responsibility for our actions. It means showing up and being present and caring and not expecting somebody else to handle it. It means having a strong sense of identity, as strong as belonging to a kitchen table, as one who attends worship in a place like this, as strong as we can be by searching the scriptures and looking for answers, and then out of that effort, finding ways to witness to our faith. It means being compassionate and knowing that we are all in this together, that all means all, has this story wrapped all around it. And when all of that is said, then it means getting your heart broken, which opens you up to hold the pain as well as the beauty of being a fully alive human being.
And so we move as God's sheep to the table, holding that question in the depths of our own hearts. Who is it around us? What voices are trying to be heard? How might we, as God's people, learn to listen this day. How might we follow as we hear that voice and become those good shepherds, following in the way of the good shepherd? I invite us to come to the table through this prayer by Steve Garness Holmes. Through this prayer, may we confess our own complicity in a world that has yet to learn to listen to the voices of Krunam or Chan. Through this confessing, may we hear God's deep and unending forgiveness that calls us to the way of the Good Shepherd. Let us pray. God, who calls us all to freedom, you are the voice that we know because you know us. Because you call each of us by name, the unsaid names you gave us. Voice of silence, speak. Utter us into ourselves. Shepherd of our souls, lead us into our own bodies. Lead this kept sheep out of our want. Through this death-shadowed valley, bring us with you. May we obediently follow toward perfect freedom. Out of the sheepfold comes a flock of love. May we become that flock of love who listens to the Good Shepherd and follows in your ways now and always. Amen.
All the poor and powerless, and all the lost and lonely, and all the thieves will come confess, and know that you are holy.
The bread of new life in me
broken. Know that you are holy, and all will see.